Welcome to It's All Journalism. I'm Megan Cloherty, joined by fellow producer Michael O'Connell. And today we have Melissa Bell with us on the phone. Melissa describes her current project as the chance to do journalism differently. As the co-founder of news website Vox.com, she's reinventing how we cover, package, and disseminate news to the 21st century reader. Welcome, Melissa. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
So before we jump into Vox and sort of what's going on there, let's talk a little bit about your background, just so people understand where you've come from and how it led you to where you are now.
It's a winding road. I left college and it took me a few years to realize that I could try writing for a profession. I was a little nervous to ever show it publicly. And so it took me about until about 25 to go to journalism school. From there, I ended up in India, where I was helped launch a subsidiary of the Wall Street Journal. And I worked there for about 4 years. And I came back to Washington, D.C. in 2010 and joined the Washington Post as a writer. I moved into blogging at the Post and started to really explore digital journalism while I was there. Then I moved into strategy at the Post and started really thinking about the big questions of digital journalism.
Mm-hmm. What type of questions were those that you were asking at that time?
You know, one of the big questions was I transitioned out of writing full-time about 3 years ago when I took on a more strategic role as the director of blogs. I loved reporting so much, but there was a lot of things that I felt like the process of blogging could be better at. Especially around technology. And it felt like there was an opportunity sort of to figure out questions, particularly around breaking news at the time. This really started with the Egypt Revolution. We were getting so much information sent to us so fast and so furious from so many different sources. And I was really curious about how you could kind of condense and understand that amount of information. But over time, it moved into sort of the reverse of breaking news. But as I moved out of daily reporting, I started to see how difficult it was to understand news stories sometimes. Unless you were really focused on the breaking news, you could get lost really quickly. Mm-hmm. So those are some of the questions that I was thinking about.
So can you believe the Arab Spring was 4 years ago now?
I know.
It just feels like time flew. So you've always worked for major, sort of like legacy news companies, correct? I mean, even though you were in India, you've always kind of worked for bigger projects. So when you and Ezra were talking about doing this, what was really like the catalyst that had you jump out of that to try something different?
It wasn't really a break from traditional news organizations to a brand new company. It was more of the question of like, where is really an opportunity to try something that is, a small experiment. One of the things that I think about it was that the Post, even though we're in a major news organization, I worked for a group that was sort of a small startup within the organization. We were kind of like off in the corner. It started as just three of us, and it slowly grew. And same with the subsidiary in India was, again, it started with a team of 10 people and it slowly grew. So even though I worked for big traditional companies, I had an experience very similar to startups there. And I think that's possible. You can't, even within a major company, you can still have the chance to sort of experiment, which you find a little bit of a corner and a place to play.
Yeah, I like what you said before about sort of moving beyond the idea in the digital space of covering breaking news and then starting to think about, how do you inform people more than just, hey, this is happening right now, but actually giving them information that sort of makes them understand something at a deeper level. And I guess, would you say that that's kind of the underlying purpose behind Vox?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think one of the things that really struck me about my own personal understanding of the news is that it changed when I moved from this sort of daily reporting to more strategic long-term planning. I was somebody who always really prided myself as, my identity was a journalist. I felt proud that I knew what was happening in the news at all times. And it was really disconcerting to suddenly feel behind the news, to be confused about what was happening in the world, even when I was working at a news organization. When big breaking news would happen and I was pulled back into coverage, the term you read into a story, you have to jump in and like figure out a bunch of context around a topic. But I felt like I was in this permanent state of reading into the news. And I realized that if I felt that way, I think that this is something that a lot of readers probably experience. They're going about their daily lives they're very busy people, and they don't have the chance to always be read into every single story. So this is something that I really wanted to help readers have an opportunity to read into the big news stories of the day.
So that sort of ties into Vox's slogan, which is understand the news. Can you explain the thinking behind presenting what's important versus what's new? I mean, it kind of sounds obvious, but in a way, it's almost revolutionary.
Well, if you think about, like, the name of our industry, new is the majority of the word. And I think we're set up to deliver the new because of the characteristics of media technologies. When you have space limitations, a newspaper of determined size or a television broadcast of a certain length, you often lead with what just happened by necessity. It's a time constraint. It's a length constraint. That's not always true, but it often is true. And I think that when we started writing online, moving our media reports to the web, we followed that model. And a lot of what we write about online is formulated around what was just posted. There's Twitter streams, there's reverse chronological blogs. But I think that we did that out of a habit, not because of a requirement. Technology doesn't force limits. There's, you know, as much service space as you have is as much as you can post. So I'm really curious about how we can take advantage of the different characteristics of the digital technology to provide context around the new.
Yeah, because certainly its speed seems to be the thing that everybody sort of recognizes that the digital gives you, that, you know, you can, you know, report things that are breaking and get that news out quickly. But, you know, delivering context, actually getting yourself out of that cycle of having to cover breaking news and then, you know, looking for meaning and reporting meaning is kind of a challenge, I think, probably for some newsrooms.
Yeah, going back to the Arab Spring, I think is when news organizations really started to think about live blogs and how do you cover live news, you know, in a way that is sort of constant and updated. And if you look at the transition, I think The Guardian is one of the best role models of great live blog technology. You can see really going back to like 2010, they just had a stream, reverse chronological, of information that was happening. But as you see, you know, over the last few years, as people start to really experiment with it, they're starting to change just the basic design of live blogs. So now you have what we do at Vox is have this like what we know, what we don't know in major breaking news. The Guardian pulls out key highlights. You know, there's attempts even in like major developing stories to add context around those stories because sometimes the latest isn't really what you need to know. It's there's something much more deeper going on.
And the way you guys do that, I mean, the way you kind of have come up with creative storytelling projects within Vox.com, like the card stacks. We actually met Melissa out at ONA in Chicago this year, and you were hosting a panel where you were talking about how a lot of these ideas, like card stacks, it was like it made sense, but then we hadn't thought about like the labor portion of it, like the actual keeping it up and keeping it relevant. Can you kind of talk about that and the challenges you guys have come across?
Sure. I think, you know, card stacks is just so, I'm not sure if everyone's familiar with them, but card stacks are a story format that we designed at Vox that presents contextual information. The design was based off, you know, note cards, really, essentially. We wanted to be like the nerdy, helpful friend in college that, you know, is like, here are my note cards on this topic. We wanted to be able to provide, let readers access those card stacks wherever they were on our site, if they came across a term or a story about something that they might not know. So it's really like playing off this like persistent characteristic of the web. And it's not a wholly new idea. Nothing is ever new online. You know, there's been attempts at similar story formats, you know, all over the web. You look at the New York Times topic pages, you know, Texas Tribune has been doing a really great job with this, with their data set, sort of providing this persistent resource for readers. The trouble with it, though, is that they are difficult to maintain. I think the reason why nobody has fully succeeded at this is that the challenge is that news stories do change, and so you need to make sure that those resources are updated. What was true about ISIS in August may not be true right now. Mm-hmm. And that really is a change in workflow for reporters and editors. We are used to doing work today and then putting it aside and starting a new project the next day.
Yeah.
Putting that aside.
I could see how that would be kind of difficult, because sometimes in many ways the news that we cover, something that's important last week, is suddenly not quite as important, and that doesn't mean the story has gone away or is suddenly not still developing. But, you know, to keep on top of that and to update these things, it must be, I mean, you just think about how difficult it would be if, you know, every week you introduce a new card stack, and then having to go back and keep all that other stuff updated is crazy, I think, mind-boggling in many ways.
Right. And then that's really one of the big first lessons that we learned, was that you don't want to introduce a new card stack every week. We started off about, I think, 80 card stacks where we launched. And I don't think we have, you know, many more than 100 now. I think we're at like 110 or so now. So we're not creating a ton of new ones. I think that in the beginning we may have thought that we would be creating a lot, but we realized that we don't have the support yet to be able to do that. Some of the things I'm like excited about exploring is, I think I'm not sure who recommended this, but somebody wrote an article about how we need to hire a librarian. And I think that that's really true. We could use the aid of a librarian at some point to help us, make sure that we're maintaining and keeping track of this resource. So one of the big things is that we just, you know, we're making sure that we're not creating a ton, but we're creating good ones when we do.
So we've been talking about card stacks here. Are there any ones in particular that you could sort of point to say that, you know, that was either a good learning experience, or B, that was something that was really successful?
Well, I think that like today is a good example of the utility of a card stack. There was an attack on Israel, I think, last night, that's a really important news story. But if that's just what you hear, that's the only information you're going to get, is there was an attack in Israel. But you don't necessarily know the full background of why there was another attack. I think sometimes you become dull to the information that's out there. You know, you hear it over and over again, but if you don't fully understand, you know, the 60 years of history that has led to today's attack, and also how important, you know, the current postponed peace talks are, you can just sort of hear that there was another attack in Israel and let it sort of glide by you. But I just recently read our Israel-Palestine card stack that our foreign team put together, and it was such a resource to be able to understand the whole background of that story in a pretty easily digestible way. And so today's story, when I hear about the attack, I have all of this information already in my head because of the card stack. So I feel like, just as a reader, I'm much better informed about that subject, and I can understand the impact and the enormity of that story in a way that I probably wouldn't have if I didn't have that resource.
Melissa, let's get into design, because, I mean, card stacks is one facet of it, but you guys sort of did a different approach as far as design and presentation of news, you know, not like the latest murder is at the top of your website type thing. Can you talk about how important design is as far as accomplishing the goal of like changing how news is presented?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that design and development and editorial, we really believe, you know, strongly that all three of those teams need to be working really closely with each other. It's such an opportunity right now to reinvent story formats. I think we're just barely scratching the surface. We talked about card stacks. We talked about live blogs. There's so many different ways that we can deliver news today. And if you don't have the whole team working together and really thinking through how people interact with the stories, I think that the product is always going to be not as efficient. So this is something that we're constantly thinking about how to make sure that we're talking to one another and thinking through the story from a holistic perspective.
When you're part of a project that has so much buzz, it can be hard to go through so much change and maintain vision. Do you think that what you set out to do at Vox is the product that you're turning out day to day?
In some ways, yes. In other ways, not at all. When I say not at all, I always go back to the yes part, because we built out a new site. That doesn't really make sense, but I promise it will in a second, if I can get to it. We set out to build a new site that isn't something that is just going to be here for a little while. We really want to build something that's here for a very long time. and we're only 10 months old. So all the big plans that I have for the place and that we want to achieve, you know, we have to make sure that we keep in mind that there's a long game here. We can't do everything at once. And so I've learned a lot about practicing patience this year. You have to slowly build out the foundation. You have to learn lessons. You have to iterate off those lessons. And so that is why, you know, what we set out to do, I do think we're also going to be accomplishing it over, you know, many, many months. This is going to take us time to build it out to reach the kind of vision that we want to have. And I think that's a really good thing. It's part of the reason why this is so much fun.
Megan mentioned that she talked to you and listened to you at O&A. I actually talked to you and Yuri Victor at a presentation you did at American University several months back. And it's funny because we actually had Yuri in here as well. And what we were talking about with him was, you know, the way that, you know, he was, you know, part of what the things that he was concentrated on was sort of changing the way the makeup of a newsroom. And when I talked to you at American University, yeah, I think we got involved in a conversation as to what exactly your title was, what was actually the scope of what you did. And I kind of get the impression that, you know, this is a different type of newsroom. Can you sort of explain how it is different than you know, the Post or another newsroom you might have that you've worked in?
Well, the good thing about journalism is that I think that more and more news organizations are understanding the value of this collaborative work. You know, Yuri and I started working together at the Post, and that's where we realized the power that we could have when we worked on projects together, by doing it in partnership with one another. But when we wanted to take that sort of sensibility to Vox, and what we really believe in is having a constant flow of communication happening between designers, developers, videographers, writers, reporters, editors. There's so many different ways that you can tell stories now. And I think that, and there's so many different ways that readers want to see the stories, that if you don't have different skill sets all working together, you really will get a lesser product. So the way that we think about it, you mentioned Yuri Victor, I don't even know what his title is.
Right.
I don't know that he does either. He's like workflow manager.
Yeah, I think that was our first question. He was like, well,
he's great. I mean, obviously he knows what he's doing.
He sort of described in general terms what it was, but seemed very reluctant to give it an actual title, which maybe that's the best way to do it. I don't know.
Well, I mean, we really don't. The titles, I think, can be so confusing sometimes. You know, this is something that we sort of struggled with. I think that it's so hard. There was an article written a while ago making fun of sort of like new media terms, new media titles, and I think that it can be distracting and confusing to people who don't know what something like, what is audience development? What is product? What is, you know, what is
innovation lead?
Innovation, yeah, exactly. And I think that is just a sign of the fact that nothing is set and determined right now. This is really the start of, you know, if you go back to like when we first started, you know, television journalism, like there was all these new jobs that were happening people hadn't experienced before, and they had to put the rules and standards in place. And I think we're in that same period right now with digital journalism. And so what we're hoping to do is sort of like try to figure some of those things out together. And so Yuri, he likes to say that he helps journalists tell stories. He's really focused on building tools that empower journalists to do their work. And to do that, he sits right across from Ezra Klein, who has an actual normal title, editor-in-chief. And when Ezra's talking about, you know, workflow issues or how he wants to tell a story or something some sort of information he has and he's not sure how to present it, Yuri's right there taking all that information in. And he can say, you know, Ezra may not know how to build a meme tool, for instance, you know, to show quotes on Twitter in a you know, beautiful sort of graphic way. But Yuri does have that information. And so Yuri is able to hear that that's a problem, build something that can help Ezra elevate his stories. And that kind of magic where that sort of like the intersection of two different types of skill sets comes together, that's right. Really what we want to have happen.
I feel like it's like a Google space where you're all sitting on balls and... I mean, you mentioned you are young, so I don't think it was, I mean, not you yourself, but the 10-month-old project. I mean, it's not really a surprise it was in the spotlight, especially with Ezra Klein as one of the co-founders. But have you guys have fallen under some criticism as far as reporting and inaccuracies? Can you speak to that at all? I know there was a Deadspin article specifically talking about the Concourse piece, but I wanted to give you a chance to respond to that.
Listen, it's not fun to make a mistake ever. Mistakes don't feel good, and they shouldn't feel good, because if it feels bad, you're going to learn lessons and make fewer and fewer of them over time. But the truth is, mistakes happen in journalism, and I think that, if you put a list of corrections that we have published on our site, you can make a story that seems as if we have, a lot of corrections on our site. But every day, newspapers list their corrections, there's on the second page of the papers, this is something that happens in journalism. It happens when you're writing the first draft of history. So what you have to do to really make sure that you're making as few mistakes as possible and making sure that you're being as transparent with the mistakes when you do make them is have a good correction policy. Mm-hmm. I'm proud of that. We admit our errors, we rectify them as transparently as possible. The biggest mistake would be to try and be disingenuous about the mistakes we make. So while that article, may have gotten some buzz, it actually made me proud of the fact that we had put a strong correction policy in place and that our reporters are following it.
We're running out of time here, but I wanted to ask you quickly about the business model for Vox.com, because there's not a ton of advertising on the site. I mean, you look at it, it's a pretty clean presentation. Is that intentional to keep it clean, or are you guys, can you talk a little bit about funding revenue?
Sure. It's a great benefit that our site is visually clean. It's one of the things, again, about sort of the collaborative nature of Vox Media, our parent company. They really believe that revenue is an important component when you're thinking about the overall end product, that it's not just design, development, and editorial in a corner, that revenue is also part of this full finished product. And Vox Media really believes, like, the business model is around high-impact, engaging ads. And our publisher, Marty Moe, often uses Vogue as an example of what we're trying to do. When you get Vogue, it's like the actual printed magazine. It's a complete package, and the ads don't impede the reading experience. They can actually add to the reading experience. And so we think a lot about how we can learn from that at Vox Media, from the product side. How can you create, a holistic experience where you have ads on the site, but they're good interaction. They look beautiful. They don't interfere with the reading of the journalism.
And I saw you guys posted a job. I think it was like 2 weeks ago. So you are growing. What's next for you guys?
Yeah, we actually have a bunch of jobs up right now. We are looking for a news app developer. We're looking for a couple editors. People can look at voxmedia.com/careers if they're interested in applying.
Plug.
But we're really focusing on building that foundation that I talked about. We've learned a lot in the last 10 months, and we've done a lot of experimenting, and now we're really excited to sort of move into a phase of getting our structure sound, really focusing. I think we're going to be focusing a lot more on visuals in the coming months, and building out our video program. We've done some really fantastic video work over the last 10 months, too. So just more of fun experimentation and new journalism, which is fun.
That sounds very exciting. Well, thanks for taking this time to talk to us. This has been great, and good luck with Vox.
Can you tell us where our listeners can find you online, like you on Twitter and all that?
Sure, I'm at Melissa Bell. It's one L, two S's, and you guys can always mention me, and I am happy to answer any questions and chat with you all.
Okay. Awesome. Thanks, Melissa.
Take care.
Thanks. Bye.
You've been listening to It's All Journalism, a weekly podcast about the changing state of digital news. Find more info on us and download other episodes at itsalljournalism.com. This podcast is produced in partnership with the Association of Alternative News Media. Thanks for listening.